CRJ230, this is your podcast for week 15. This is the final podcast. There's not a podcast for week 16. For this week, we're looking at, initially phones, but really data, mobile data, because at this stage, most data is mobile, right? I mean, more often than not. So I asked you to do some reading. In particular, the landmark Riley versus California case and the progeny after Riley versus California sort of, opens up and continues where we go with some of this. I kind of always come back to evidence is evidence. And that seems to be how things have evolved, even with technology. We're dealing with the same considerations, but we'll get into that. So in Riley, the Supreme Court held unanimously that generally, police must first obtain a warrant before searching an arrested person's cell phone. Do we even need to say cell phone anymore? Because how many of you have a landline? But cell phone, mobile device, let's just say that. Now, in that case, the police searched David Riley's cell phone after he was arrested on gun charges and found evidence of gang activity. Some historical context here, okay? Some of you may remember, most of you probably don't. I still held on to the flip phone until about 10 years ago. And my wife just berated me to get an iPhone. I regret it. But if you would have grabbed my phone, my old flip phone, you could open it up and you weren't going to see much in text messaging because the thing was super tiny and I didn't like the text. But you didn't have to stick it in my face or get a code or anything. You just opened it up and you could have scrolled through all the calls I made. You could have accessed all my stuff. That's the time frame we're talking about. And that's what technology was like. Before cell phones, drug dealers used pagers a lot. And you could just snatch the person's pager and you're not going to get a lot of information, but you get the access to the last numbers that had called that pager. Data. Now data and how we get to data and then what kind of things are available has changed drastically since Riley. But just to give it some historical context, that's kind of how it worked. And at the time, it wasn't uncommon for somebody to be taken into custody and the phone taken off them. And just as I described, how you could have just opened my teeny tiny little flip phone and seen the history without doing much. Now that's changed, but Riley set this expectation. Excuse me. Allergies. In a second case, the police arrested Brema Wuri for selling drugs and used his cell phone to figure out where he lived, where they found more guns or more drugs and guns. So if you remember the fruit of the poisonous tree, you know where we're going, right? The search of the cell phone without a warrant was improper, then the search of, or finding out where he lived and then going to that place without, you know, a search warrant and finding more paraphernalia. And again, it goes back to some of the things that I've talked about with the map case as an example. Remember, map versus Ohio way back in the day, several 15 weeks ago. And you remember some of the things I said relating to if the police would just had taken a deep breath. If they would have just taken a deep breath. If they would have sought a search warrant, which they had plenty of time to do. Then the paraphernalia that they eventually ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court on, which is, you know, some porn in a, you know, in a trunk in a big old suitcase. The trunk's like a big old suitcase. In the basement, probably wasn't going anywhere. They could have gotten to that. And that's kind of the same thing here. The Fourth Amendment requires the police to obtain a warrant before they conduct a search, unless there's an exception. And that's something we know. That's something we established a long time. The exception at issue in this case was a search incident to a lawful arrest. In the 1969 case of Schimmel versus California, the court identified two factors that justify an officer searching an arrested person: officer safety and preventing the destruction of evidence. 4 years later, in United States versus Robinson, the court held that the police could search a cigarette pack found on Robinson's person despite the absence of these two factors. The court then noted that, and this is quoted, having in the course of lawful search come upon the crumpled package of cigarettes, the officer was entitled to inspect it. Now, the prosecution wanted the Riley court to extend that reasoning from Robinson to searches of data on cell phones. In other words, and if you keep in mind that this was pre-iPhone, but if, I guess if you pull out your iPhone and assume that if I took your iPhone and stuck it in your face and it opened up, is that similar to opening the pack of cigarettes or looking in the pack of cigarettes? The court was not convinced that destruction of the data through remote wiping, third-party deletion of all data, data encryption, an unbreakable password were prevalent problems. And even if they were, the court determined that law enforcement could address both of those problems. To an argument that cell phones were materially indistinguishable from other items on an arrestee's person, that lower courts have allowed police to search without warrants like wallets and purses, the court responded, "This is like saying a ride on a horseback is materially indistinguishable from a flight to the moon. Both are ways of getting from point A to point B, but little else justifies jumping or lumping them together." At that time, when cell phones were way different than what you have in your pocket or your purse or your bag today, the court noted that cell phones are microcomputers with immense storage capacity. The Riley Court readily admitted that its decision will impact law enforcement's ability to combat crime. But the court noted that expectations for privacy come at a cost, and warrants are faster and easier to obtain now than ever before. Huh. That's what I've been saying. Even way back, Matt versus Ohio. Just get the warrant if you can. The court also stated that the exigent circumstances exception may justify a warrantless search. For example, to prevent an imminent destruction of evidence in individual cases, to pursue a fleeing suspect, and to assist persons who are seriously injured or are threatened with imminent injury. So, again, exigent circumstances. And let me read those again to you. For this particular court, exigent circumstances exception may justify warrantless searches, and the examples they give, to prevent the imminent destruction of evidence in individual cases. All right. When this person's under arrest and the cell phone is taken, the cell phone's going to be taken and put in inventory. The rest of their personal items, they're not going to get the cell phone in the jail cell. Get working on your warrant. Get working on your warrant. If that's really something you want to get into, you want to get into that phone. Or to pursue a fleeing suspect. Well, that's not what we had here. There's an exception. Figure out where they're going. But then again, and you probably see this on both reality and a real and drama television shows, what happens? Well, you get the warrant, which you can get quickly, and you have a tech person dive into that phone. The person fled, and they left that phone behind, or that mobile device, whatever it is. You want to get in there and find out what's in there. Why'd they ditch that? But get the warrant, and you can get a whole bunch of other stuff. All right? You can help your investigation. And then finally, and to assist persons who are seriously injured or are threatened with imminent injury. Now, I'm not sure in the mobile device situation how that's going to play out, much different than the fleeing suspect situation, and why you're going to need to open that device to assist with that. But if there is one, court said it's a exigent circumstance. Now, some of you are going to appear at a crime scene to preserve evidence. Others are going to find yourselves arriving to gather and process evidence. Still others may later end up receiving and analyzing evidence. Some of you are going to be dealing with these types of issues on either the prosecution or defense or in some way. The court system, wherever you fall in the process of securing, gathering, processing, or presenting evidence, you should keep in mind, what's your role? What's your role, and what's the law related to your assigned task or role? As I've said, what you do and how you approach your job could very well hinder or help an investigation and subsequent arrest or attempt at a conviction. And all that's been duly noted in all the things that we've discussed this semester, all the cases we've discussed. When it comes to the evolution of electronic evidence, the general principles of evidence have not changed. But the technology, the processes, The methods of obtaining, securing, and keeping the evidence in custody and intact, those things are changing rapidly. In the end, it's about documenting and having someone competent to testify about each stage of the discovery process, collection, preservation of that electronic evidence, right up to the date the evidence is offered to prove or refute the charges that are being tried in court. And as noted in the various case items that you're going to present for this week, chain of custody, the ability to authenticate, those are going to be those issues that come up again and again with this type of evidence, just as it is in any other type of evidence, in the adjudication, hearing, or trial, civil or criminal. So it's imperative that all of you understand the chain of custody, your role in the chain of custody, whether chain of custody was broken, whether it was followed, whether that chain can be authenticated and the evidence can be authenticated. The last thing I'm going to say, and if you listen to this podcast, you're going to get it. And if you didn't listen, you read my post maybe later in the week, you're not, so you get it here only. If you have any skill with technology, if you have any interest with developing your skills in technology, if it's a passion, if it's something you find easy, if you like doing these things, and you also like law and justice, I would highly consider or highly encourage you to consider looking at, you know, some of the things you can do to get credentialed in cybersecurity and in the technical side of technology, because there aren't many people that are in law enforcement. They're far and few between. There are at the large agencies, and if you want to go to work in a large agency, there's plenty of jobs for you to do those things. There are also jobs and openings and things that you should, you know that would enhance your career. If, say, you wanted to go to work at, you know, Tazewell County Sheriff's Office, if you had a certificate in cybersecurity, you understood, you know, how all that works, and you could write up warrants or help write up warrants or applications for warrants, search warrants, that is. If you could help do that because of your technical knowledge, your employability, you know, that thing that distinguishes you from someone else in the job market, and if you kept those skills up and kept growing those skills because it was an interest of yours, you could merge that interest with your interest in law enforcement or the law if you go on to law school or whatever. Leverage that to some pretty decent opportunities that would serve you for a very long time. Just that last commercial there. Because I know there's some of you, because I've talked, maybe not in this class, but if you are in this class, you know who you are. I've talked to you and said, you know, get off the gaming system and do your homework. Get your stuff posted. Don't wait till Thursday at 9 o'clock because you're off playing whatever, yelling at the monitor, and you got this super sophisticated computer that you built yourself. You're that person, all right? Get out of Call of Duty and get into real life Call of Duty. Lots of opportunities there. All right. Know the law. Carry it out for your respective duties. I'm around to help you with transferring, with careers, with career questions, with future classes, with references for any sort of continuing education, wherever you go, as well as jobs. All right, I plan to be here for a while, and even after I'm not around, I'm going to be connected to our career field. So if you need me, you know where to find me.